Minority in Parliament accuses government of downplaying potential economic damage of Trump's 10% tariff on imports from Ghana.
The president has charged us to ensure that this problem is addressed.
While the U.S. ambassador is telling the Ghanaian ministers that tell the Ghanaian president to talk to President Trump, the president of Ghana is telling his ministers, deal with it. Folks, this is a matter that needs to be taken more seriously than it's being taken now.
We tell you the government's strategy going forward as Virginia Palmer attacks the government of Ghana to raise the issue at a higher level. Also tonight, Okada riders reject government's proposed age restriction for commercial motor riding to 25 years as they warn a refusal to amend LI could breach their trust and spell doom in the next elections. Also tonight, details as the National Road Safety Authority vows to crack the whip on riders who will violate the regulation of the passage.
After we do all these things, if we still have recalcitrant Okada riders, then the police would enforce the law by arresting them. And when that happens, your union cannot come to your aid. Mm. Your company will not come to your aid.
Also tonight, Lands Minister Emmanuel Kofibua pledges sweeping reforms to Lands Commission to restore public confidence as it rips into the institution's corrupt image.
The people of Ghana, this is their view of the Lands Commission. You know, they think that the Lands Commission is one of the most corrupt places in Ghana.
We got a response from the Lands Commissioner in business.
Finance Minister Dr. Atuforsen announces no government contract to be approved without commencement authorization form from the ministry.
And his Sports Minister Kofi Adams vows to get to the bottom of the debt of Nigerian boxer as he inaugurates 7-member committee of inquiry to investigate the tragic death.
Also in the bulletin later, we'll take you to Siru Basic School in the Wild West District, where pupils and teachers risk snake and scorpion bites just to learn. Your views and comments here on Newsnight, 055-111-1997. Details after the break. Live on Newsnight is on Joy 99.7 FM. Now, the minority is accusing the Mahama administration of downplaying the potential impact of a 10% baseline import tax on Ghana by the United States of America. Ranking member on Parliament's Economy and Development Committee, Kojo Opon-Krumah, says government has failed to treat the situation with the agency deserves, with a $240 million trade surplus recorded in 2020, Ghana now finds itself in the crosshairs of a 10% tariff hike that threatens to undermine gains made under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. Now, the U.S. ambassador to Ghana, Virginia Palmer, told Joy News after a high-level meeting on Monday that there was need for further discussions on the matter.
I had a great meeting with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, and we talked about how the relationship with Ghana is very strong and how we can keep it going that way. And the sort of details of what these global tariffs are, and some things where the United States and Ghana can improve our trade relations.
And the lowest tariff regime, what does that mean to, you know, between the relations that we have?
Well, I hope that it means that Ghana will have some benefit vis-a-vis its competitors, but we'll dig in and continue to talk.
You convinced the minister enough.
The minister and I are good friends.
In women's success this International Women's Day.
And that there was the outcome of that particular meeting, according to the U.S. ambassador to Ghana. After receiving full briefing on the matter, the deputy trade minister, Samson Ahihu, disclosed how extensively the briefing was after they had met with the ambassador, disclosed that the president wants every option explored to resolve the controversial tariff. He says one of the strategies being considered by government is to align with the position of the Africa Trade Ministers and the African Continental Free Trade Area Secretariat.
We briefed the president after the meeting. Myself and the foreign affairs minister met with the president, and then we briefed the president. And he also largely believes that we should pursue the trade diplomacy to ensure that something can be done about the tariffs. And for that matter, we believe strongly that there's not a time for us to fight. There's no trade war, even though we are not happy with the imposition of the 10% tariffs. But we think that we should adopt more friendly, diplomatic way in trying to resolve the matter. But judging from the outcomes of the meeting, I want to assure the business sector, I mean the business community, that the government will pursue whatever we have to do to ensure that this matter is resolved so that we can continue to export onto the U.S. market and continue to end the foreign exchange that helps our economy.
And very quickly, you can confirm that the president, that we can expect the president to get involved himself in at the presidential level. Is the president going to be involved directly in this conversation to Trump directly?
What I can say is that the president has charged us to ensure that all efforts are made to ensure that this problem is addressed.
It's addressed, okay.
And yes, and I'm sure that once we have his blessings, if he has to intervene, he will certainly do that. As Africans, we have agreed to fight this collectively. And so on the 14th of this month, after his organizing a meeting with African trade ministers to look at this situation.
Is the president going to be involved directly in this conversation to Trump directly?
What I can say is that the president has charged us to ensure that all efforts are made to ensure that this problem is addressed. And I'm sure that once we have his blessings, if he has to intervene, he will certainly do that.
My ranking member on the Economy and Development Committee in Parliament, Kojo Opon-Krumah, says government is not treating the issue with the seriousness it deserves.
According to Samson Ahin, who is Deputy Minister for Trade and Industry, Ambassador Palmer herself appeared taken aback by the inclusion of cocoa in the tariff scheme and suggested that Ghana pursue resolution at a higher diplomatic level. That's code language for tell President Mahama to talk to President Trump. And remember, we've been making the point that the President of Ghana needs to get involved to speak to the US President to ensure that the potential negative impact of this thing doesn't affect us. But there's another part of this report I find very interesting. Come again. Samson Ahin says that President Mahama has tasked us, that is his ministers, to ensure that efforts have been made to ensure that this problem of the Trump tariffs slapped on the country is addressed, Mr. Ahin revealed in an interview. In other words, while the U.S. ambassador is telling the Ghanaian ministers that tell the Ghanaian president to talk to President Trump, the president of Ghana is telling his ministers, deal with it.
Let's speak to Kojo Opon-Krumah, who joins us on the line right now. Mr. Opon-Krumah, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. The Samson Ahin on the show yesterday also mentioned that the president taxed them to yes, engage, but if it becomes necessary after that first line of engagement, he will definitely get involved. So he hasn't ruled out his own personal involvement in this negotiations and engagement with the U.S. At any stage just yet.
Well, firstly, while he's asking his ministers to deal with it, in other jurisdictions, the presidents are directly engaging or sending delegations to the U.S. ostensibly to deal with the matter. I think Vietnam, for example, is having its leader reach out to President Trump directly via phone. And other nations like Indonesia are said to be preparing high-level delegations to Washington. Even Lesotho, according to the New York Times, is organizing to do direct engagements. And that's what the U.S. ambassador is hinting, that you don't deal with this matter by asking ministers to try and understand and consult. You need to deal with it at the highest diplomatic level.
Except that the other countries you mentioned, Ghana is on the lower end of that scale, 10%. Others have a far greater need to engage and strike a deal. We are on the lower end of the spectrum. In fact, 70% of our exports are exempted, oil and gas. That leaves about 30% that is affected. So you cannot propose that we adopt the same approach and possibly incur the wrath of Trump. We've seen what Trump is doing to other countries that had taken a tough stance on this particular matter.
No, we have not suggested that Ghana takes a tough stance. We have suggested that Ghana needs to engage and make a case for a de-escalation. Remember that these countries that we are talking about are not necessarily under IMF programs. They don't necessarily have the kind of economic challenges that we are having. And so even for them, who are not in as precarious a situation as we are, they are making efforts to engage directly so that announced tariffs can be reduced or waived, because they can see that even they who are in a better position than us, if it's not waived or reduced, it will have a dire consequence on their economy. And it's in that context that we say that it is important for this matter to be taken a lot more seriously than it's taken now. We've just come out of a period where international economic developments had a disproportionate impact on the Ghanaian economy. I remember sitting in your studio and explaining to you the kind of challenges we were facing as a result of international economic development, and you telling me that it is because the government had not responded strongly enough. The governor of the central bank has just warned the government that if this is not taken seriously, it could have dire consequences on the economy. So all we are doing is drawing the government's attention to the fact that it needs to be taken a lot more seriously than the kind of laissez-faire approach that we are taking now.
I mean, you say laissez-faire only because the president hasn't picked a phone and called Trump, but they are taking this absolutely seriously. You know, I mean, there's a reason why they've invited the ambassador to meet. Assurances were given to them. Some clarifications were offered. And next week, Ghana is joining the rest of the continent to take a united position on the matter.
You would expect that by now, some of the nation's top economists and trade economists will be invited by the president to offer him advice, so that himself and his economic management team can take a certain position that they are taking into these discussions that they are even doing. So far, the announcements that have been made essentially are about the fact that we are seeking clarification from the U.S. We don't appear to be aggressive in formulating a national position and using that position to try to reduce the impact that this is having or this will have on the Ghanaian economy. It is because we have seen this before that we are drawing attention to it.
As we, where we are now, we've heard the government's plan to deal with this particular matter. Next week, they will join the continental body. They've also made the point that they are making efforts to try to see if they can renegotiate the continuation of AGOA. And they are going to come under the African initiative to go as one body. What do you make of that approach? Because some suggest that if you tie your cloth to those of, say, South Africa, which has a far higher tariff imposition than us, for example, in the 50s, and we are in the 10, and we know how Trump looks at that African countries compared to us, then you are incurring Trump's wrath, and then you are then fighting somebody else's game and pursuing other person's interest. Like, we should pursue our interest and stay in our lane for the 10% and negotiate for more exemptions. What's your take on that?
This is precisely what we are saying. And what you are saying is what the government wants to do, which is to tie its cloth to South Africa and Lesotho and some of the other countries that have already incurred the wrath of the Americans. And what we are saying is that the President of the Republic needs to engage directly on a country-by-country basis. The government says two levels. One, they prefer the ministers to deal with it, despite the fact that the American ambassador is saying deal with it at the highest diplomatic level. And two, they want to join other African countries, some of which, like you have rightly said, have incurred the displeasure of America, and therefore will be commingled with anybody who comes to the table with them. So what you are saying is the same thing that we're saying, that it is important for the President of the Republic to directly engage with his American counterpart and try to see how best the impact can be reduced on the Ghanaian economy. I mean, you see the President hobnobbing with presidents of Mali and Niger and Nigeria and other ones. That's fine and good, but this is where it matters most, for him to be hobnobbing where it matters most. We're talking about over $1 billion worth of exports. Yes, not all of it is affected by this, but it has dire consequences on our economy.
Kudu, thank you very much. And we'll hear from the government's response to this. Some say he will join us down the line on this particular subject that has been raised. And we've heard already the potential impact on us, especially if you come to cocoa products exports. Last year, for example, we're doing $288 million in terms of that export. That is going to be affected because of this 10%. And effectively, AGOA is dead. In September, it was supposed to be to expire formally, but the quota free, duty free is gone now. The government says it's something that they are pursuing to try and see if they can get Trump to listen and renew, because after all, it was an act passed by Congress. We'll get further clarity on this for you. Now, tonight, the Okada Riders Association, they've rejected government's proposal to restrict the legal age of commercial motor riders, popularly known as Okada riders, to at least 25 years. The provision to limit eligibility mobility of riders is part of the new legislative instrument being drafted to amend the existing road traffic regulations 2012. Now, this was reviewed during a consultative engagement between the Transport Minister, Joseph Bukari Nikpe, and stakeholders, including the Okada riders themselves. James Abeji was there for us, joins us in the studio right now. James, you have excerpts of part of this LI, which is causing a bit of controversy. What does he say?
Well, Evans, excerpt of it says that a person shall not ride or operate a commercial motorcycle or tricycle unless that person is employed by or belongs to a licensed commercial motorcycle or tricycle transport union. Part of it also states that the person shall not be less than 25 years of age, which is part of the provisions, also extend to the fact that the regulation would also cover the mandatory use of helmet, periodic inspections, and rider training under this proposed LI. But the most important thing is that nobody would ride motorbike if for commercial purposes, if you are not 25 years and above.
Okay, so fundamentally, let's be clear. This is a piece of legislation that is seeking to legalize Okada.
Exactly. Because
before now, it's still not legal.
Illegal.
Except that it's imposing an age restriction whilst it legalizes Okada.
Exactly.
Okay. And there's a conversation around when government is hoping to have this passed.
Yes. The CEO of the National Road Safety Authority, Abraham Maliba, just a while ago was speaking to Elton on Pulse, indicating that we know that Parliament is currently on recess and they should be returning somewhere after Easter. And so if Parliament returns, the first thing they will do is to get this through in the first month after Parliament resumes. Also indicating that they would enforce every regulation in this law to the latter.
Constituent Okada riders, then the police would enforce the law by arresting them. And when that happens, your union cannot come to your aid. Your company will not come to your aid. Apparently, you need 12 cities. I don't know whether it will be revised. And so if you do your mathematics, and I don't know what figure you have. I'm not a mathematician. But it is to deter Okada riders from engaging in acts that are unacceptable on our roads. It is not to destroy. We are not imposing this to destroy the commercial venture that they are engaging. It is to deter them from engaging in acts that we would call against the traffic regulations. But if need be, and we think that we need to increase the scale, we will do so. But for now, this is a good starting point. Let's move on and see what the outcome will look like.
All right. And are you certain that this legalization will take place before the end of the year? Are there timelines that you are working with?
We are actually thinking that when Parliament resumes, this bill will be before Parliament. It takes 21 working days. And when it passes, surely it will be within the year. And I can assure you that we'll have a repeal of the law within this year, and that will make Okada legal.
Well, we've been speaking to the association. They are already raising questions about this. We'll hear from the Okada riders pretty shortly. My colleague is with a few of them having a conversation right now. We'll get his thoughts for you, plus what the Okada riders have been saying. But I want to hear your thoughts on that also. Remember that this is an attempt to legalize the Okada business, but they are imposing an age restriction, which is caused a fair bit of controversy. But I know some of you use Okada. What's your thoughts on this? So if an Okada rider must be at least 25 years to be commercially use that vehicle for commercial purposes. There's some concerns around that. Let me hear your thoughts on this. 055-11-11997. Now, the Lands Minister, Emmanuel Amakofi-Buah, has promised to implement sweeping reforms at the Lands Commission to curb corruption at the institution. The Lands Commission is battling a reputation of corruption and delays in its operations, a situation the sector minister urgently wants fixed and dealt with right now. Kofi Bua says the commission's current image threatens confidence in Ghana's land system.
The people of Ghana, this is their view of the Lands Commission. And I'm going to say it as honestly as I can, as I have listened. Now, despite all the good people here and the hard work, you know, they think that the Lands Commission is one of the most corrupt places in Ghana. Do you?
No.
The people of Ghana believe it. And so there's a lot I want us to share. I don't know how long I'm going to be a minister, but I'm going to wake up every morning and thank God for this opportunity and work with you to make the big difference we can.
One of the biggest interventions that has stalled hasn't really been fully realized is the digitalization of land records. He says this is something he wants to prioritize.
I know that 90% of the systems and the work you do here is done manually. In the 21st century, lands administration, 90% of all the things we do is still paperwork. Papa no akwa vacation to Oba next month. The other thing has to do with digitalizing all your documentation and make sure that the systems are all clearly there so the people of Ghana can walk in here happy, get the service within a twinkle of an eye, and the image of the Lands Commission will be really be the best, number one. And Afrobarometer every year will stop bashing you.
Well, guess what? The Lands Commission themselves admit that corruption remains a major challenge within the institution. Listen to Benjamin Arthur, Executive Secretary of the Commission.
It's a perception, yes. And the Lands Commission hasn't run away from the fact that our dealings and our processes lend itself to the possibility of people influencing and staff and other people to be corrupt. So steps are being taken to try and address that. But at the same time, we also know that it is fueled essentially by the perception and the fact that there are individuals not within the commission who also take advantage of our situation and then extort money from people.
I'll share your thoughts on that subject pretty shortly. And for those of you who have already engaged the Lands Commission, you can attest to your encounter there and how that went. Share your thoughts with me here on Newsnight that pretty shortly. Now, I want to take you to Siru. It's in the Upper West District, and to a particular basic school there called Siru Basic School. Now, classrooms have become a danger zone. Snakes and scorpions attack both pupils and teachers, while the straw classrooms offer little protection. Yet the children keep showing up, determined to learn. Emmanuel Jibenu has more in Education Series Crumbling Start.
Children here love to learn. Their thirst for knowledge is unquenchable. But the school they attend is a reflection of the challenges they face daily.
My name is Don Ambata Ayela Mahatibel, the headmistress of Siru DAKG Primary. We don't have a school structure, so most of the classrooms sit under trees. We construct huts almost every term for pupils to sit and study.
The school is also not benefiting from the National School Feeding Program.
The community during the rainy season have to contribute some foodstuffs, then maybe some cash to buy some of the perishable foodstuffs so that they can prepare for the school.
Every day, different members of the community step in to cook, donating what they can from their farms. Today, two women from the village have volunteered to cook yam and stew for the children.
Today is quite a happy day for them, so because they'll get something to eat. But if the school foodstuffs finish, we have to wait for another rainy season or harvest season again. And during those times, most of our people stop coming to school because they come to school, they are hungry.
Kindergarten 1, 2 and primary 1 pupils share one classroom. Primary 5 and 6 are crammed into a half-roof pavilion. Whenever it rains, classes are suspended as water floods their classrooms.
Here we are now. If it is raining, we can't sit. We have to close and go home. Mm-hmm. So if, assuming it's rain like for 3 days, we have to be in the house for 3 days. We can't come to school because of the building. We don't have any.
The classrooms, built with straws and rudimentary materials, have become a haven for reptiles. Snakes, scorpions, and other creatures share space with the pupils, making every day a gamble with nature.
The environment is not child-friendly, to be frank. Every now and then, teachers and pupils are chased out of the class by snakes. We have an incident. A snake have to chase a teacher in the class out there from the mango tree. Then even the main class, a snake have to chase myself and my people. It fell right from the ceiling. And it has been happening often. It is just God. We are trying to fix our structure. So all of the sides, it's one of the sticks. So I just had a listen. So when I checked, it was a scorpion. But as we are sitting down, we sit small time, we look around. So as we are sitting like this, but we are not comfortable.
Despite the constant threats, the teachers and pupils persist. Their resilience is rooted in the love for learning. But even the most passionate desire to study cannot overcome such dire conditions.
They love school. They love school. Schooling days, you see them, they come in a group. That's what alone gives me joy. I feel I'm making an impact. If your impact is not positive, you wouldn't see any child here.
Siru Basic School needs the attention and support of a wider community, the government, donors, and citizens alike.
They're also part of Ghana, and they also need a structure to live on. As we are here, it's a rainy season. As they are sitting down, they are feeling cold. The weather is not all that friendly, so we are managing, especially Harmattan season, for instance. 2 or 3 days, we want to say, well, I'm not feeling well, so the person has to go home. Or when they come to class like this, last week, for instance, one was vomiting because of the weather. Challenges are just sometimes out of hand, but we manage what we have.
Siru Basic School's cry for help is not just a call for infrastructure. It is a call for the future of Ghana's children. The time to act is now. Emmanuel Jivenu, Joy News.
Let's see if we can get some action from the Member of Parliament for the area. Joins us on the following night right now. Peter Lanchini Tobu is the Member of Parliament for Wild West. Mr. Tobu, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. You're aware of this?
Thank you very much, my brother. Good evening to you and good evening to your cherished listeners. Let me first of all congratulate the people of Siru for their dexterity and love for education. The people of Siru form part of the catchment area where their children used to attend school in Kanga, a nearby community, where they have the nursery, primary school, and the junior high school. But as the community grows over time, the people of Siru decided to initiate the creation of a school for their own children. So they started with a nursery. This is a community initiative. It wasn't actually a government-sponsored creation. The community themselves came together and put up a place to deal with nursery. It grew up to the point that we now have class 6. Fortunately for us, government has taken over that school. It has become a government school now. And we need to do all we can to support them to have infrastructure that is right for purpose. But I've always said this. Whether you have the infrastructure or not, whether you sit under a tree or even in your room, please continue to learn. Whatever the challenges are, those challenges should not put you out of school.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's exactly what the poor children, innocent children, they are doing. But here's the thing. You're dealing with scorpions there. You actually go to school and get bitten by that. That then becomes a fatal story. You've mentioned about some of the interventions, but it doesn't appear from what we encounter there that it would take much to improve things in the Siru Basic School. I wonder if personally at that level you've taken this on, either yourselves or the DCE, to try and fix this.
I personally visited that school on more than 2 occasions to encourage the teachers and encourage parents. And we do hope that that fund or government could find some money for us to construct hard block classrooms for these children. But as we speak today, it hasn't happened yet. And we are also saying education is collective. It's not just necessarily government.
I mean, you say you visited there, but a visit.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's fine. But visiting there is not the same as fixing their problems. What did you do when you visited?
Of course, if you don't visit there, how do you fix a problem that you don't know?
I get it, but
I go to visit. Yeah,
you have
Kano land.
Yeah,
it is my constituency, and I'm telling you that I've visited them. I've assessed the situation, and in providing solution, we need to get in touch with authority. A 6-classroom Gwagwa, look at how much it's going to cost.
I mean, but
so we are trying as much as possible.
You have your share of the District Assembly Common Fund.
Beautiful. This is a common fund for an MP for 4 years. I don't think he can build a 6-classroom block. Just look for the quotation of a 6-classroom block and imagine how much. And of course, if I have money as an MP to build 1 6-classroom block, and it will take my whole common fund for 4 years, I may be looking at other options as well and trying as much as I can to get other sources to support myself. I'm pushing GetFund. Now that GetFund is uncapped, I think that we are getting into an era that can give us favorable response.
So where we are now, the school still is in dire need of assistance. I mean, we've seen the reports that MPs are getting quite a substantial amount of money from the GetFund, etc. Can we get a commitment from you tonight that you will devote part of that amount to fixing the problem that you face in this basic school?
Thank you very much. If I vote the whole amount, I wouldn't be able to do a 6-classroom block. That is a reality on the ground. So MPs have gotten 200,000 Ghana cedis as something from GetFund. So 200,000 Ghana cedis cannot proceed in 1-classroom block. MPs have gotten common fund. Put that whole thing together and go and look at the quotation for 6-classroom block as we speak now. And you realize that the MP will have to lobby. The MP will have to do all other things to bring government involved and bring that fund administrator involved. But it's all about the MP's fund. The MP can do very little.
Yes, but your party's in power. You can lobby on their behalf.
Exactly.
You have the DCEs now currently being finalized. So there's a whole lot you
exactly.
can do. What's the commitment? What's
exactly.
The
commitment? At least the Ciro school, I can tell you, is in the front banner. And as we confirm our DC, hopefully within the month, he takes office. We'll look at other opportunities available for us to give a befitting status to the people of Ciro so that they can be happy that they have a school. It is in the front banner. We'll look at it.
Thank you very much. And that there is Mr. Tobu, who is the MP for the area in question. You can find the full piece on many social media platforms. George Afe is here. George, I know you were not in Saito. I mean, I know you went to a private school, so you may not have any appreciation of the CU-based school in the States. I was in a Saito, very similar to this one. We didn't have a classroom roof on top of our heads, but it was good to be in that school.
You know, don't go anywhere far. You know where I live around East Legon there. Go to the Labawaleshi. Now we've seen some improvement or some construction there, but it used to be very bad in the past. Mm-hmm. And you don't even need to go outside the Accra to mm-hmm. experience the state of these primary schools and government
my
schools
in
this thing. And Labawaleshi is in East Legon.
Ah.
And you should look at the structures there. Yeah. So it appears we haven't done much when it comes to improving the state of infrastructure for our basic schools in
and
the country.
The truth about this is it won't cost much.
Mm.
To fix one school at a time, but what do you have in the headline?
Well, Evans, coming up in business, Finance Minister Dr. Atuforsun announces no government contract to be approved without commencement authorization from the ministry, warning any breach would attract serious sanctions. And Bank of Ghana to sanction financial institutions over failure to disclose all fees and charges to borrowers and even force refunds in some cases. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, your number one stop shop for all your office essentials, Synthes tanks and Pepsodent herbal and charcoal. You welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, Finance Minister Dr. Atuforsun has announced that no government contract to be approved without commencement authorization form from the ministry. The Finance Minister gave the directive at the meeting with chief directors of the various ministries, departments and agencies in Accra. There is more in the following report.
The finance minister in the meeting maintained that this directive is part of measures to ensure fiscal discipline not only at the ministries but all government agencies, adding that this should be seen as an end to what he describes as financial recklessness. The minister added that this directive is in full alignment of the recently amended Public Financial Management Act 2025. The finance minister told the directors of all these agencies, departments and ministries that any breach of this directive will attract serious sanctions.
And that is a Business Desk report. Now, President John Mahama is pushing for a resumption of all stalled projects in the country financed by the Czech Republic. Ghana has also signed a bilateral air service agreement with that country that could lead to commencement of scheduled commercial flights between the two countries. President John Mahama announced this at the joint news conference with the President of the Czech Republic, Pet Pavel.
It is our hope that the implementation of these MOUs will reinvigorate and spearhead cooperation in various sectors between our two countries. In addition, we discussed the need to expand the frontiers of our relations and cooperation with the Czech Republic, both at the bilateral and multilateral levels. At the bilateral level, note was taken of potential for trade and economic cooperation. I'll therefore urge the private sectors of the two countries to come together to explore possible avenues for cooperation in various sectors of the Ghanaian economy, and more could be done to increase the low levels of trade between our two countries. In that regard, I noted that the African market has a population of over 1.3 billion people, and I extended an invitation to the business community in the Czech Republic to partner with their Ghanaian counterparts to take advantage of the opportunities provided by the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement.
And that is President John Mahama speaking at that joint press conference with the visiting Czech Republic President Pet Pavel. The Association of Ghana Industries has welcomed moves by government to push for an extension of the Free Trade Pact AGOA to avoid trade disruptions to the country's exports. The Deputy Minister of Trade, Samson Ahi, disclosed to Joy News that government is moving fast to engage the U.S. government on these issues. Sir Chumakwabwa is Chief Executive of the Association of Ghana Industries.
How do we ensure that Ghanaian companies are able to produce at competitive price? When we do that, our product becomes very competitive in every market. And in that sense, you diversify your market portfolios. You don't only go to the U.S. I know Ghanaian products are not only exported to the U.S., but you can deepen your market arrangement in other countries. So Europe, the rest of Africa, Asia, and the rest. If your products are competitive, good quality, good packaging, you can get market in all these areas so that your portfolio or the amount of goods you are sending to the U.S. market, even if it's affected, others will compensate for it. So for me, the best solution is that let's look at other markets. But in doing so, let's look at ways of making production costs lower. And that's where you become competitive in those markets. Otherwise, if you just pay a lip service to it and you don't get your products produced at a cheaper price, a cheaper cost and a cheaper price, you are not competitive. Once you are competitive, anywhere in the world, your goods can go there. And then if one door is shut, others will be open for you.
Sir Chumakwabwa is Chief Executive of the Association of Ghana Industries. Now, the Bank of Ghana has given the firm assurance that it will not hesitate to sanction any financial institution with failure to disclose all fees and charges on loans to borrowers. Now, this was contained in new guidelines on letters, basically about responsible borrowing in the financial space. There is more in this report.
The Bank of Ghana, in the same guidelines, also warned that the financial institution in question will also be forced to refund all fees and charges that were wrongfully paid by the borrower. This follows the Bank of Ghana's warning that any charge or fee that is not disclosed to the borrower prior to signing that loan agreement will be considered as null and void. The Bank of Ghana also advised borrowers to seek clarity on all conditions pertaining to the bank loan Before signing the document, the regulator also advised borrowers to look out for annual percentage rate of the bank in question or shop around for that bank or financial institution with the best rate before moving to apply for that loan. The move by the Bank of Ghana is part of effort to empower borrowers when it comes to securing a loan from a financial institution. The regulator also wants to ensure that no one is shortchanged when it comes to turning to any financial institution for support.
And of course, that is a report, a business desk report put together. And basically, what the Bank of Ghana is doing is in line with financial literacy and ensuring the borrowers are empowered to ensure that they can get the best terms anytime they go out to engage a financial institution. Now, if you turn our attention to the stock market, Gwell was the only gainer at the end of trading on the market today. It was up by 4 pesos and to close at 1 Ghana cedi 75 pesos. If you look at total returns on the Ghana Stock Exchange, you've made, if you invested from the beginning of the year to now, you've made more than 24%. Now, that is far better than what you might get on other investment instruments in the market and even the treasury bills.
You know, it's interesting. The world markets are tumbling on the back of the Trump tide.
But not the Ghana Stock Exchange.
Not at all. I mean, there is turmoil on the global scale.
Listen.
All the markets are struggling.
Listen, a company like Apple has lost $260 billion being wiped off in terms of its value on the market. And it appears not to be ending.
Yeah,
but when it comes to the Ghana Stock Exchange,
it just shows you that our economy and our markets are not that interconnected.
Some will also tell you that, you know, whether our market is actually that connected to the international world as well. And even if you invested on the market from January to now, you've gotten a return of more than 24% even.
Okay. I guess if you're not sure what to do on the New York Stock Exchange, this is the time to direct some of the money onto the Ghana
Stock Exchange, guys, will come.
You get more stability.
Yeah.
And in fact, I actually learned that a significant number of those investing with instruments on the Ghana Stock Exchange are foreigners, actually.
A chunk of them are offshore investors.
The percentage is quite significant indeed. And so Ghanaians are not even taking up that opportunity as much as foreigners are doing. George, thank you very much. And it's a big day on the sports calendar because there is a Champions League. There's a big game tonight. And guess who's joining me to tell you all about it? Because the Multimedia Group are doing something pretty special on this. Hello, Bruce Bao.
Yeah, Evans. Well, it's the Hit FM Rep Your Jersey event that we're launching today at the car park of Hit FM, just in front of the Multimedia office there, and already fans have thronged to the event, to the venue, ahead of the big game between Real Madrid and Arsenal. It's the first time both sides are meeting since 2006 when they met in the Champions League. So it's a big game. It's the first leg of the quarterfinal game. And if you're in and around Kokomlemle, you can come to the car park of Joy FM, Hit FM, and you see the fans already standing, some also getting sitting as we launch the Hit FM Rep Your Jersey and also bring you live commentary of the game. Also, we're all watching it there, so you can make your way there. Not just Arsenal versus Real Madrid, but also Inter Milan and Bayern Munich. That game is happening, of course, at the home of Bayern Munich, and waiting to see how both sides will fare in the first leg of their respective quarterfinal fixtures. But earlier today, also, the Ministry of Sports and Recreation, led by the Sector Minister Kofi Adams, inaugurated a 7-member committee of inquiry to investigate the tragic death of Nigerian boxer Gabriel Oluwasehun. The Nigerian collapsed during a bout at the Bokun Boxing Arena in Accra on March 29 and was later pronounced dead at the Kolebu Teaching Hospital. Well, the minister has charged them to, within 21 days, produce a report on the circumstances that led to the death of the fan. Well, my colleague Daniel Krante will be giving commentary on that game on Hit FM, and he joins us on 4 now for quick update on what's happening at the scene. Daniel.
Hi.
Yeah, Daniel, what can you report? How's on the event? No commentaries at 7 p.m. What can you report ahead of the launch of the Hit FM Refugees?
Yeah, the live game between Arsenal and Real Madrid is at 7 p.m. That's in about 10 minutes' time. The 2025 Hit FM Refugees has just been officially launched. And it's on the 31st of May,
at the exhibition social assistance, it will be happening live in the Europa League final. We obviously yet to know who will be playing in that final, but it's happening live on the 31st of May this year. We are looking forward to that between Arsenal and Real Madrid and the first ever UEFA Champions League quarter final at the Emirates Stadium. Arsenal are hoping to perform a miracle and knock out European club royalty Real Madrid, defending champions as it stands. Real Madrid is still trying to make it back to back. We are the only team since the rebrand of the Champions League to win our second trophy, and we are looking forward again. And we'll have to go back Arsenal over two legs, that is this week, tonight, and then next week, second leg in Panama. And we are supposed to make the final. So it's a very interesting time that awaits us in just about 5 minutes' time. And we're
Daniel, thank you for the update there. Of course, you can hear Daniel on here, 103.9 FM, live commentary on that big game. Not sure where you stand on this, Evans. Arsenal fans are very, you know, strangely optimistic about
anything other than
their
Arsenal
chances.
For me. I mean, Real Madrid all
the
way.
They're strangely optimistic about their chances against Real
Arsenal.
Madrid. I'm telling you.
Oh, Arsenal, they are always optimistic until they are not. Mm. I mean, when they started the season, they are always going to win it, and then they don't. They are the chief bottlers of... You know, they have the world title when it comes to bottling anything. Well, so I'm not really worried about Arsenal. That is what Arsenal supporters do. Mm. They hype.
Did they have a chance against Madrid tonight?
Absolutely not.
Well, anyway.
I mean, it's one of those teams. They are always second place or third place. For a long time, they were happy with fourth place with Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
I mean, once they qualify for the Champions League, they've won the Premier League. Mm-hmm, now, second place is the thing. For
yeah.
them. I mean, they're
yeah.
happy with, you know.
And if, so, I think for now, playing Madrid is the title for them this season.
Yeah, of course.
Just so excited to have
Madrid. Very excited. You know, that's the whole thing. For them, it is not the winning. Mm-hmm. It is the participation.
Yeah.
You know, just participating.
Yeah.
Is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Arsenal supporters are extremely mediocre, you know.
Oh my goodness. I'm not sure your fans will be happy with you. Anyway, Evans, that's it.
I knew
yeah.
to me, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you haven't told me, where do you stand on this? Too?
Oh, I'm a Madrid fan. I'm a Madrid fan.
You know, I'm a Madrid fan. You know what's up.
Yeah,
you know
I'm a Madrid fan.
And then the other game also is
Bayern Munich versus Inter Milan. That's happened at the Allianz Arena in Germany. So, and tomorrow, of course, we'll get to talk about tomorrow's games. Barcelona in action and... you know, Aston Villa also in action against Paris Saint-Germain. So we'll see how that fits.
Yeah, Ms. Bell, thank you very much. And yes, I support Manchester United, and you can say anything you want. We are down there. He who is down fears no fall. Still here on News 9 on Joy 99.7 FM. A few of your messages on our WhatsApp console now. And this one from Richard says, I'm wondering what's the science behind the 25 years for Okada commercial riders. And my colleague Joseph James Abaji has been to talk to a few of them just around the corner. It's good news to legalize Okada in Wale Wale. A lot of underage boys are engaged in it, and I think it will sanitize the system. That's Boama Desmond from Borga. The irony of Ghanaian politics. Another recent suspicion of money laundering was he mentions names of ministers he believed may be involved too. And then the story around the Intim Fojo is still raging, still live here on News 9 on Joy 99.7. For many of you, obviously, talking to us about the decision by the government to legalize Okada, but also in place age restriction on it. Now, the Transport Minister, Joseph Bukari Nigbe, says government is actively seeking a private partner to re-establish Ghana national airline. Now, Ghana has been without a national airline for a long time. Speaking to staff of the Ghana Civil Aviation Authority, Mr. Nigbe announced that a shortlist of potential partners will soon be released. Colin Frimpong has more.
It's been 15 years since Ghana last had a national airline. Government is reigniting hopes of reviving it with the help from the private sector. Past efforts, including deals with aviation giants like Boeing and Egypt Air, never took off despite signing memoranda of understanding and public declarations. President John Mahama has announced a renewed push to get a national carrier back in the skies.
The last attempt by the previous administration to re-establish a national airline has failed. We will reopen a transparent process that will receive expressions of interest to invite competent, established partners to work with us to establish a national airline. We believe that an efficient national carrier can help reduce fares on routes where external carriers are currently enjoying a monopoly.
Spanish-based World Aviation Group has already expressed interest in partnering with Ghana, but Transport Minister Joseph Bukari says the country cannot fund this dream alone, citing current economic challenges.
We have received a lot of proposals. We are aware that we inherited an economy that is challenged. On our own, we cannot establish a national airline. And so we're looking for partnership. And in that, you don't rush to take partners. You take time, do a search over them, and know who they are and their capacities to deliver or to partner with you to be able to bring in a national carrier that will actually fly our flag for a very long time and in comfort. So we're working on the proposal they've submitted. Very soon, we'll shortlist a few of them.
Ghana International Airlines ceased operations in 2010 after sinking into debt and legal trouble. Today, government is betting on partnership, not public spending, to restore the black star to the skies. Collins from Thorns Report, right to you.
I mean, let's stay with transportation and that controversial decision by government to legalize Okada but impose a 25-year age restriction on those who want to use motorbikes for commercial purposes. And my colleague James Avegi is at an Okada hub and joins us live right now. And the Okada riders are actively debating this, James, I suppose.
Yes, Evans. It has been a discussion between them at Circle here, one of the motor stations, and I would like you to hear briefly from one of them who thinks that this will be a bad idea. You think that the 25 years is too much. Why?
Well, because it's too much. If they say they want 25 and above, many of us is below. Because, like, if they say they want that age, that means some of us know the Okada. So, and then maybe the Okada that we are also managing and the first much more.
Mm-hmm. So you want them to reduce it to how many years?
Or like 18 and above. Mm-hmm. Like 18 and into the age, because if above the standard is it's down. Mm-hmm. But 18 and above there is okay.
But you promise that if they reduce it, you Okada riders would ride safely on the road?
Oh, true. We ride safely. Because if we want our lives, so we're not riding carelessly. Because we do our lives.
What's your name?
Razak. Ali Razak.
Okay. Evan, so that's just one of them who have the position that government to reduce the age restriction to at least 18 years to allow for more of the youth who are using this as a business to get involved in this.
Okay, thank you very much, James, there at one of the Okada hubs. And just joining me right now for a conversation on Geek Squad is Peps. Have you been on Okada before?
Do you know, it's one of the things that I really dread.
Oh, really? So you haven't joined one before?
No, I think unless I travel to a place that by all means, that's the only means of transportation.
Well, otherwise, you haven't been hot before. I actually used one. This must have been 2023. I was going for a very important meeting at Canmis. And I stumbled into this terrible traffic, and there was no way I was going to make the meeting.
You had no other choice.
So I parked it at this filling station, flagged down the Okada, hopped on the back of it with my bag, and zoomed straight to the meeting on time.
Wow.
You haven't found yourself in that situation?
Not yet.
Okay. When you
Hopefully
do,
not.
When you do, call me. What are you talking about?
Talking about Okada now, we are looking at work in general. Just think about the fact that you get to use ChatGPT, right? So some 3, 4, 5 years time, some jobs are going to be replaced. We want to talk about it and get our listeners ready for the future. Mm-hmm. Because we have the report already that has come from the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. And there are certain jobs that are just declining as the years go by.
News readers.
Mm.
AI is reading the news now. Let's put the script in, other sounds. Read for you, come and play it here.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need newsreaders, mm-hmm. except you're doing news tonight, because I have to ask questions.
You see,
but if you're reading our bulletin, you have to go. But that is a very important,
very, very important. Yeah. Very important.
Anyway, stick and stay.